You're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and my guest today is clothier Andy Day. Andy lectures about apparel design and merchandising at Baylor and runs the brand Mary Claret, a contemporary women's clothing company. She talks about her background designing costumes for films, her appreciation for Magnolia and its customers, and why right now is the best time to start a business. But before we get to the interview, it's the word on the street. An easy way to make your city better is by studying what's successful in other places and adapting that model to your own. There's an entire organization dedicated to this mission. What Works Cities is a Bloomberg philanthropy that connects civic leaders across the country in hopes of using data and evidence to improve services, inform local decision-making, and engage residents. We can monitor trends and tastes in 2017 in ways we've never been able to do before. And What Works Cities hopes to aggregate that info and share it to make all our civic centers stronger and more efficient. I just got back from a trip to Barcelona, Spain, where the streets sing with activity, and next week I'll be in Seattle. There's an incredible intensity in the urban cores of these cities, and that results from density, lots of people inhabiting a small space, usually because they're all packed in mid-rise and high-rise buildings. Ashley Thornton just took a trip with the Greater Waco Chamber to Cincinnati, Ohio to do this exact thing. So Ashley, what can you tell us about your experience there?
It was a really great trip. I had no expectations about Cincinnati. I'd never been there. It turns out it's a city that's larger than us. It's about twice as big as us, and the metropolitan area is a lot bigger, but otherwise very similar. River, challenges with poverty, all kinds of exciting things going on. I think my favorite things were they have a neighborhood that's very close to downtown that's called Over the Rhine, and we got to see a lot of the ways that arts and business investment and economic development and education and all different elements were coming together in that particular neighborhood to make really some amazing strides.
What is something that you saw specifically in Cincinnati that you think could be applied here in Waco?
Well, one of my favorite things they had going on was this program called Artworks. And what they would do is have artists come and sketch out murals. And then students, young people, ages like 14 to 21, would come and do the work of kind of doing the basic paint-in on the murals. So it was art plus a jobs program plus getting, you know, kids involved in the summer, and it just seemed to have all kinds of beneficial effects on the community. A lot of the kids came from the neighborhood where the murals were being painted, and it just felt like a really good cycle of benefit being put into place.
We've talked about it on Downtown Depot multiple times. Arts and culture stimulate economic activity. Mm-hmm. Ashley, I'll get you out of here on this. What in your time with Cincinnati did you learn about Waco? What are you seeing new in Waco because you got out of town?
I think one of the main things is the appreciation for the ease of access to relationships here. One of the phrases that they kept saying in Cincinnati was, you're just one coffee cup away from anybody in town. And I thought, where is that more true than Waco? I mean, that was just, they kept talking about how that was one of the most beneficial things as far as entrepreneurism and, you know, getting new ideas going in town was just this concept that you're just one coffee cup away from anyone in town. And I thought, oh my gosh, that totally describes Waco. We should be celebrating that and making sure everybody knows that's the kind of town we are too.
Ashley Thornton, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thanks for having me.
The biggest Waco business news of the past 2 weeks is that Fixer Upper will end after its fifth and final season. Chip and Joanna Gaines have spun off a number of ventures since the show first aired in May 2013, and they're ready to slow down. It'll be interesting to see how a lot of this plays out. You know, the silos draw an estimated 20,000 visitors per week, and a lot of those people come into town wanting to spend money at local Waco businesses, not just Magnolia. This has been an incredible era in our city's history, and I hope that Chip and Joanna will continue to be a national draw. But as a small business owner who's personally benefited from the Magnolia Effect, to Chip and Joanna, thank you. You only get one life to lead, and I appreciate and honor your commitment to keeping your house in order. So thank you for loving our city so well and for being worthy ambassadors of Waco. Really quickly, two super cool developments to touch on. First, the TIF board has earmarked $7.9 million for the Brazos Commons Riverfront development. This will be between Clifton Robinson Tower and the Brazos Promenade Riverfront development from Catalyst Urban Group. Developers Joe Beard and Rick Sheldon are bringing an 11-story Drury Plaza Hotel, retail spaces, and 400 residences to the site. So, hey, maybe we aren't so far away from urban density after all. Second, Blake Batson and Corey McIntyre are taking their Milo Biscuit Company concept to the next level. At the corner of 11th and Franklin, they're set to unveil Milo All Day, a full-service restaurant serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner that'll also have a coffee shop, a bar, a butcher shop, and a bottle shop. Tate Christensen of Barsh Construction owns the building with a couple partners, and he'll handle the build-out. He received nearly $500,000 in TIF funding for the project earlier this summer. Andy Day is a Baylor professor and the owner of Mary Claret, a contemporary women's clothing company that can be found on Instagram at Mary Claret USA. Andy, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you.
Why don't you start off by telling me a little bit about your history with Waco? I know you were a student at Baylor. Tell me about your roots.
Sure. Coming back to Waco is definitely unexpected. I graduated from Baylor with a degree in apparel design and went to Dallas, and I worked for a few years in costume design. And
this was on the TV show Dallas, right?
Yes, yeah. I worked on several TV shows in Texas and New Mexico. And when I was an undergrad studying apparel design, I kind of fell in love with costumes and wanted to be a costume designer, and ended up, after living in Dallas and New Mexico for a couple of years, I ended up going to Austin to get my master's at UT Austin in costume design. Sort of strange, like, not strange series of events, but just sort of going through the process while in graduate school of kind of exploring my interests as a designer. I became interested in entrepreneurship, starting a business, kind of just fell into it. And at the same time, I've always had a good relationship with my program at Baylor that I graduated from. And in my last semester of grad school, I came and adjunct one class. So I drove down to Waco like twice a week from Austin to teach a single class in my last semester, and ended up, our program needed an additional professor, so I came in full-time last year. This is my second full-time year at Baylor teaching undergrads, so it just sort of happened. I didn't expect to be here. I thought at one point I would like to teach at Baylor, but I didn't expect it to happen so soon. So that's kind of how I got back in Waco.
Waco, the land of opportunity.
I know. That's what people are calling it, right?
I mean, I really feel like now is such a great time. If you were to just say, I'm going to dedicate the next 10 years of my life to just being in Waco, I think you'll look up in a decade and be amazed at how much you could accomplish here, simply because, I say this on Downtown Depot all the time, not everything has already been done in this mm-hmm. city in the way that it has in a lot of other places. And you've been a beneficiary of
mm-hmm.
it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the growth that I've seen here just from as a college student, then coming back, and then just in the year I've been here is crazy. I mean, like, when I was gone a lot in the summer, there's a bunch of buildings that have been renovated over the summer and new businesses going in. So Waco is constantly growing, and it's so cool to see that.
So can you tell me a little bit about, as a lecturer in apparel design and apparel merchandising, what are you teaching your students?
So it depends on the semester what my specific classes are. So I have students, so you can better understand what they're wanting to do with their careers. I've got apparel design students that are planning to design clothing, do parts of the product development process for creating apparel accessories. And then apparel merchandising students, some of them want to be buyers, own boutiques and businesses. Those are a couple examples of what those students want to do. And so my specific areas tend to be my classes that I teach regularly. It changes each semester, but I teach a fashion illustration course, which is a drawing course, where they're learning to illustrate garments and basically communicate design. And then I teach this semester, I'm teaching a sophomore level design class. So this is their first pattern making class. They learned to do draping, which is what you see on something like Project Runway. That's the best example visually, where people are taking fabric and putting it on a dress form. And then we do design and construction. So they design garments and then they create them and fit them to a model. And so it depends on the semester. Next semester, I get to teach like a fashion history class, which is, as a person with a background in costume design, I love the history of clothing, and so I'm really excited about that. But that sort of, it varies with each semester what the needs are of our program.
How do you teach and think about high fashion? Like, what is the role of high fashion?
And by high fashion, you mean like designer?
Yeah, so
fashion?
I'm talking like something that's walking down a runway, someone is wearing a sunflower.
Right.
It's not necessarily what you would wear out on the streets of New York City. But once again, is it art? Is it function? How do you kind of balance those two?
I think that, you know, it all depends on the designer artist that you're looking at. And we do see the trickle down into our mass apparel from those designers. So is it something that a lot of universities are doing? We're really teaching our students to design for a customer, like for the masses, versus a high-end designer that a lot of the stuff you see on the runway is never actually produced for a customer.
Right.
It really exists for marketing purposes. Like many of those companies, their actual product that they sell and make money off of is perfumes and handbags. And so those products exist more to give the brand an aesthetic and something interesting and exciting to look at, but they're making their actual money through like consumer products. So we use a lot of designers as inspiration as a costume designer. I take a lot of inspiration from like high-end designers because of the use of really interesting fabrics and textures and stuff. And you can see a lot of inspiration historically from what they're doing. But when it comes to the college, particularly in universities, we study those designers and the way that they use art to influence their work. But we are really instructing our students as to design for an actual customer that can buy their product.
Well, in discussing how Waco is ripe for young entrepreneurs,
mm-hmm.
There are, I'm sure, students in the fashion merchandising program who are trying to come up with concepts that could potentially work here in Waco.
Yeah, definitely. And you see a lot of students that pair with – that start their own sort of business. Something that's really cool is there's a student blog called Buttoned Bears that is like a fashion blog that I'm really impressed by. There's some Baylor students in our program and I think probably in the business school that are working together it's an app called Curtsy, which is basically taking the concept of Rent the Runway, but where college students rent clothing from one another. And so I love seeing college students kind of dabbling in these entrepreneurial ideas while they're a student. They may not continue that exact idea on after school, but just the fact that they're like starting something and they're not afraid to like put themselves out there into the student population is, I love watching that. That's really cool.
You're hearing from Andy Day. Andy is a lecturer in apparel design and apparel merchandising at Baylor University and is also the founder of Mary Claret. Talk to me about how the concept for Mary Claret came about.
Like I was saying, my background is in costume design styling. So I've worked in like television and commercials and basically any type of product that involves costumes as a freelancer. And so I'm very aware of the retail setting. I've been to a million stores. I've shopped more than like anyone.
What are your favorite personal stores? Where do you shop? If you're not just getting fabric, like if you're going for something that's already made.
I am a big online shopper these days because it's just the most accessible method. The city of Dallas itself is one of the best shopping hubs there is, so it's really nice that it's so close to us. But I, these days, I'm a big, online shopper. I tend to, I'm a big advocate of Zappos, which is now an Amazon-owned company, because they're so consistent. They get the product to you really fast. I tend to put things off to the last minute, and I need like shoes for a wedding, and I know that if I order from them, they will come like the next day. And so stuff like that is, I think, the way a lot of retail is going, for a reason that it's easy for the customer to do it. I'm also, because my background as a stylist, we buy like tons and tons of things, and then we try them all on, and then like 90% of it goes back. So I tend to approach my own shopping like that. I'm like, I need shoes for this wedding. I'll buy like 5 pairs and like keep one and then send the rest back. So I kind of like have to have all the options.
I like it.
Yeah. But so Mary Claire, it sort of started from when I was in grad school at UT, I was studying costume design. I have an MFA, but I ended up taking a class in the MBA program while I was there just to kind of get out of my area and try to meet some students in a different field. My master's program was tiny. I was the only person that graduated with my particular field of study that year. So it's really small. And while I was in the class, I am a person who always has ideas that I'm thinking about for businesses. And I did this MBA class where I pitched a business concept to the class and ended up like recruiting a group of students to work with. And for like a year, I worked with another student at UT where we kind of talked about this clothing business we were interested in starting. We did a bunch of research. We worked on it together. And then we were graduating and it kind of fizzled out. And we were like, this was cool, like great, but like let's do our own thing. And at that same time, I was like, I had at one point a lot of fear in starting a business, like I think a lot of people do, afraid of failure, afraid of people laughing at you or not wanting to buy your product. But when going through that process and kind of doing market research, I sort of learned that what's the harm in trying? And so my company started from just me selling a single product on Instagram to friends as like a pre-order. Without it ever being called Mary Claire, it took like 6 months before I named it. It just was me like being like, I designed this thing. Who wants to buy it? And of course, if you have supportive, kind friends, and maybe people liked it, not just because they liked me, but people ordered it and it was an inspirational and I kept going.
And what was the first piece?
So I designed this linen hoodie. It's kind of like a tunic. It looks really good on everyone. It's super flattering. And it's like a really great travel piece. You just throw it in your bag and take it anywhere. So that was the first item, was this like linen hoodie. And I do it now in multiple colors. And then I'll come out with it in the spring in a different set of colors. But that was the first item.
Do you work exclusively with linen?
Right now, it's all with linen. But I'm in the process of adding some silk items and then cotton as well. In the spring, I'd like to try do more cotton too. But currently, everything I have in my inventory right now is linen.
The business model that you're talking about is something that has only come about because of the internet. So, for instance, last year the Chainsmokers went on a national tour. This is a dance band. They went on a national tour and they sold all of their tickets online. Through crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. So it was like, hey, we'd love to come to Colorado Springs. If 20,000 people in your city pre-buy tickets, then we'll come there.
That's awesome.
And so you create the demand and then you create the supply. So you're not ending up with, you know, 500 linen garments that nobody wants. And it's so smart and beneficial for you that you were able to start it that way.
Yeah, it's incredible what crowd. Like, I've never done sourcing in the way of, like, a Kickstarter, but I still do pre-orders on products because it gives you the ability to fund the product, to see if people want it, and get an idea of what maybe the colors that are light. Like, if you have multiple colors, gets you an idea of what's going to be popular. So when you order more inventory, you kind of are able to purchase what the customer is demanding. There's never been a time where you could start a business so easily, I feel like. Many years ago, I would have to like open a store, have a lot of cash to do that. And I could start my business with very little upfront money. And I think that that is what's so cool about things like Instagram, social media, that gives people the ability to do that. I mean, you can not even have a product, right? Do you have an idea for a product? And people have funded like $1 million projects, which is really, really neat.
Do you use Like It to Know It?
I do not. I follow a lot of bloggers who have products on Like to Know It, but I don't currently. I've worked with a little bit with bloggers, but mostly ones I personally know. So there's a lot of people, bloggers, that went to Baylor. And so a lot, the only bloggers I tend to work with are ones that I've known in the past.
When I look through the Mary Claret Instagram feed, and you can find Mary Claret on Instagram mm-hmm. and on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. I don't really use Facebook. I have a Facebook, but I don't use it.
Instagram is the primary social media. And this is MaryClaret, Mary Claret.
USA is Instagram, Mary Claret USA.
And when you're looking at Mary Claret USA on Instagram, I see designs that are intentionally flowy, open, generous, comfortable. It reminds me a lot of Brandy Melville, sort of the idea where, like Brandy Melville, if you're not familiar with the brand, they make one size. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be intentionally free-flowing mm-hmm. And can fit anybody. What is the idea behind these designs and what are you trying to achieve?
So the kind of the idea behind the fit of my clothing is that what you see with women's apparel is that, you know, like any business, people have to cut costs in order to create a product that's inexpensive enough for people to buy. And so a lot of products for women, women have a huge issue with fit in apparel. If you like to take any like Pulitzer study, there's a large quantity of customers that have problems with fit. And so, and part of what that is companies are trying to save money on the amount of fabric they put into a garment. And so what I do is when I design the patterns, I put in extra fullness. I wish my clothing was one size fits all. That would make it so much easier because I have six sizes. But I put in extra fullness. For example, I have these linen pajama shorts. And what I do is I put extra fullness in the leg. If you've ever bought a pair of shorts and you put them on and they're tight across the thighs, you're like, ugh, and you immediately want to take them off. What I do is I put in like 3 extra inches around the fullness of the leg so they fit more people. And no matter kind of the size of your leg, they fit into them and they are flattering because the extra fabric surrounding your leg is slimming rather than it kind of being too tight or riding up or anything like that. So yeah, the clothing is intentionally designed with fullness, basically to allow space between the body and the clothing. My clothing is also all woven and I use like a nice heavy fabric. And what that does is also slims the body. It would cover up like a person's stomach or it gives you like a little bit of distance between the body and the clothing to create kind of a slimming effect. So it is intentionally designed with fullness in order to flatter my customers.
So when there's a new Mary Claret product, I know it starts with you at your sewing machine here in Waco, and if there's enough demand for it, then you send it up to the factory in Dallas. Is that how that works?
Yeah, so what my process looks like, and I feel like this is fairly unique to me, and it is kind of like a lean startup method for producing clothing. It's not probably the most efficient, but it's for me, it keeps costs low and gets customer interaction for me. So what I do is if I have a new design I'm working on, I will – like I've got a new skirt that I'm working on that I'll bring to Silebration next week. And I'll produce a small quantity of it and I'll see how it does with customers. I'll try a price point and I'll kind of engage with them on the product. I do make everything in my like tiny home studio, which involves an industrial sewing machine in my bedroom. And I'll – design the product, I'll maybe try it on a fit model here, I'll produce it, and then once I'm confident in the customer's like for the product, colorways, etc., I will send my patterns to Dallas and I'll have it produced on a larger scale in a factory up there, a small batch producer.
You mentioned the Silebration that'll be happening next weekend, October 12th through 14th. What can fans expect from Mary Claret at the Silebration?
So we have a few new items I'm really excited about. I've been doing these linen pajamas for about a year, and I carry them all year round. They're really kind of seasonless colors. And I've had a lot of customers request robes. So I've got a new robe that matches them. They're really cute. I've got my wrap skirts do really well, and I've got a whole new colorway of those and different lengths. What I love about Silebration or any of the Magnolia events is the customers that attend those events are the most engaged, excited customers. They're great to interact with. Businesses like mine get so much insight from them. You get to really talk with people and they'll take a look at your stuff and be like, do you make dresses? And you're like, no, what kind of dress do you want? And they'll give you an idea of the kind of products they're interested in, which is really nice because it helps lead me into new products. A lot of the stuff I work on is something that multiple people have asked me for. So it's celebration is, I hope that Waco people are not deterred by the crowds because it is super fun. You don't have to park that far away. There seem like a million people, but they set out like an L of two streets on right on Webster and 6th, and they've got about 100 vendors, and the vendors come from mostly Texas, but as far as Utah, I think Washington State, the East Coast, all to come down to Waco for this, and it's incredible, the greatest quality of goods. And what's so cool about it for me as a small business owner kind of progressing each season in my business is seeing it's a combination of a lot of small business owners at various stages in their business. You have somebody like me who's like totally bootstrapping, and then you've got somebody like Letter Folk who is completely blown up. They're like those letter boards you see on every Instagram feed.
Yeah.
They're there. They sell in Magnolia, and it's just really neat to see all these businesses at different stages. All in one place. So that's what's – it's so cool to be a part of it.
And tonight for First Friday, Gather is opening on Washington Avenue. They've got their grand opening from 6 to 9, and Mary Claret can be found in Gather as well.
Yeah, we have two really cool apron styles and two colors available at Gather. I loved working with Sarah, the owner of Gather, on this project. She's collaborated with a bunch of small businesses for the store, and they've created products just for her. So it's – Our styles really go with the vibe of her store. She has really great taste. Everything is really clean and modern. And so we have two like aprons that are available to buy at Gather. So you should check it out.
Andy, let's get out of here on this. Tell me why doing business in Waco is great for you right now.
The community of small business owners is really neat. It's cool to be a young small business owner in Waco and have so many friends and acquaintances that I can bounce ideas off of. I'm in a group of women that do like a creative happy hour once a month, and we just talk about our businesses, bounce ideas off of one another. And it's a place where you can start something inexpensively and where the city is so desiring culture and something to be proud of that their customers are really engaged. And I get a lot of purchases online from Waco, which I'm often surprised by, but it's because customers here want a product that they feel a connection to, whether it be a restaurant or a clothing item or jewelry, et cetera. You have a really supportive customer here because they feel like they're part of your business because you're a part of Waco. And so it's been the perfect place for me and my business right now. I never would have expected that, but it's been a really cool place to grow it quickly with the way that Waco engages with a small business like mine.
Andy, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thanks. It was really, really fun.
I'll be back on October 20th with another episode of Downtown Depot. But to get all the gossip in between shows, follow Waco Business News on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.